On the Couch with Frank Rubino, psychotherapist, each week on the Lucy Ann Lance Show, 1290 WLBY. Think of this as your free therapy session, but if you would like to engage with Frank otherwise, you certainly may do that. He practices out of Plymouth, Michigan, and you can find him by Googling Frank Rubino, R-U-B-I-N-O, and Psychology Today, where he has a nice landing page. Today's topic, pathologizing, what was it?
Bad behavior.
Ooh, that sounds difficult. Well, okay. Pathologizing bad behavior. What kind of bad behavior are we talking about?
Lucianne, we're talking about all kinds of bad behavior. It's interesting, everything from children. Now, when a child acts up, it's oppositional defiant disorder. Or every time somebody engages in boorish behavior, it's narcissism. And the reality here, Lucianne, is that I think that there has been a push in the last maybe 15 years, certainly the last decade, to take regular run-of-the-mill bad behavior, slap a diagnosis on it, and then everyone can engage in this public bath of pain and suffering by complaining that their fill-in-the-blank other person has this disorder.
It gives them an excuse, and it doesn't hold them accountable.
Exactly. All the way around. Everybody gets an out. And I think it's really damaging. It's been damaging. I think it's been damaging to our culture for a long time. But it also, I think, is damaging to us as individuals by engaging in this kind of behavior.
I mean, no disrespect to your profession, but is this a way to legitimize your profession by giving everything a name and therefore a path to figuring it out?
I think there's a certain amount of that. I do. I don't think that the psychological community is the only one. I think that the medical community does it too. Mm-hmm. I think you can take your car to a dealership and they're not above doing something like that as well.
Oh, that's funny.
So I think that, I think it's a way for people to try and understand bad behavior. And instead of just calling it bad behavior and encouraging people to do better, it becomes a title, and then everybody can just make their own decisions from there.
So I struggle, and I've asked you about this before, but in courtrooms, for instance, when the defense is mental illness, mm-hmm. how one can determine that if you murder someone, it was because you were mentally ill, not just because of horrible behavior.
Well, right. So there's two sections to that. One is somebody who is incompetent to stand trial. And that means that they are unable to either understand the charges against them or they cannot aid in their own defense. So when that happens, we as a nation do not put people on trial when they're unable to defend themselves. We put a pin in it. We wait. They get sent to do evaluations. And at that moment, they are incompetent to stand trial. If that continues and they are not restorable, they may wind up as not guilty by reason of insanity. And insanity is not a psychological construct, that's a legal construct. And what that means is that because of this person's mental illness, they are unable to understand the gravity of what they've done or comport themselves to behave in a way that would keep them from committing such a crime, et cetera.
How is that different than pathologizing bad behavior?
Well, because the difference there is one of them, a person really has no fundamental understanding of what they have done. They cannot recognize the gravity of it, the seriousness of it, or even maybe what they did was wrong. Mm-hmm. In the other one, they did what they did. They understand what they did was wrong, but we're going to paint it with this other label on it and give this person sort of an out.
Why do we keep doing bad behavior when we know how it's going to make us feel? We know it's going to get us into trouble. And yet we continue to have that personality, if you will, of being a boor or a not very nice person.
Well, Lucianne, okay, that's a great question. And I think the short answer is because we get away with it. You know, I was talking to someone the other day who mentioned a recent divorce. And this person said, oh, my ex was a narcissist. And my insides kind of just tightened up just a little bit. And I thought, hey, what does that even mean? What does that even mean, this person was a narcissist? And in this person's eye, it was easy. Label my ex as a narcissist. Now I don't have to own any of my part in this collapse of the relationship. That's a bad person. I have the label of narcissist, and everybody gasps at the, oh, a narcissist. Oh, no, say it isn't so. And everybody gets to kind of walk off. And I think it's just, I think part of it is it's a label to call someone a name, and then it also alleviates us of any of our own guilt.
So what's the reality here? Let's delve into this and find out what should be happening, not labeling these kinds of behaviors the way we do psychologically.
Well, I think what we do is we call out bad behavior when we see it and recognize it. It's just bad behavior. You do something wrong. Hey, don't do that thing again. You did something. It's wrong. Own it. Let's move on. And I think for people who don't want to own it, that's a different problem. Again, probably because there were, I would probably guess, mother at home growing up, always allowing the child to do and get away all the time. And nobody holds them to account. And you wind up with this bigger, much bigger problem later on.
Yeah. All right. So who's at fault here? Who's doing this to us? Yeah, or are we doing it to ourselves? But yeah. when you look at your profession and how it wants to label everything the way it does, that's not helping.
Well, I think the label's always been there. Narcissism has been around for a long time, but we never heard of it. And I want to say it was about 2013, maybe about 2011. Yeah, 10, maybe something like that. That's about the first time we started seeing it in print. The idea has been around there for a long time. But about that time is when people started writing books about it, and then all of a sudden you couldn't shake a stick without seeing somebody who was a narcissist. So I think a lot of that isn't just the psychological community. It's the rest of the country and the culture kind of getting a hold of these labels and then just running with them.
Is that true, though, that all of us have a little bit of narcissism in us? We have to protect ourselves. We are who we are, and I would gather that we are the most important person to anyone. We have to take care of ourselves and protect ourselves from the big bad world. So I don't know. Is that narcissism?
Well, narcissism isn't good or bad. It's just a thing. Mm-hmm. Babies are the most narcissistic creatures on earth. They don't care. They're hungry at 2 a.m. They don't care that mama didn't get any sleep.
But they haven't learned either. They haven't learned.
No, but this is narcissism at its core.
Okay.
It's I am the only important thing.
Right.
And so as you get older, you learn that you're not, but you're still kind of taking care of number one. So there's a little bit of that that's okay.
Okay.
Where it becomes a disorder is when it becomes problematic to every other relationship. And that's a, you know, a much bigger deal.
Frank Rubino, psychotherapist with us on the Lucy Ann Lance Show here on 1290 WLBY. Frank, let's get to the bottom line on this. How do we protect ourselves from ourselves? How do we not embrace these labels and own up to our bad actions?
Well, that's a great question. And I think part of it is recognizing when we are doing things that are wrong. And I think social media has really thrown gasoline on this fire because it rewards the narcissism. It rewards people for look at me. There was never even a word for taking a picture of yourself, mostly because you couldn't do it. Now, you know, there's a term for it. So I think part of this is backing away from this need to have all of this, the accolades for the attention-seeking behavior. Back away from that, and I think seek more to understand than to be understood, to borrow from a St. Francis of Assisi line.
Yeah.
And I think that would be a big part of this.
Yeah, and we'd all be better off for it, right?
Well, I think so. And I think that we'd be healthier. I think our relationships would be healthier. And I think as a culture, we'd be healthier as we help to correct each other's bad behavior and not just label it.
Yeah, I agree. It used to be that in our relationships, our spouses, we would put our spouse first. We would, you know, we're a team together. It seems like we've lost that way. In fact, I know someone who is doing something now that is questionable in my mind, being married, as far as needing, this person needs their own space. And I don't understand that. I guess I should be happy that they're staying married, but I don't understand this idea that you need your own space and you need a break from your spouse. That doesn't sound like commitment to me, but
Yeah. And, you know, I think that there's a very introspective piece that's missing. You know, the other day there was an interview with President Obama and the former first lady. And I don't know if you saw this or not, but
are you going to tell me about the question that Robin Roberts asked at the end about what is next? And I believe that the president said fun, if I heard him correctly, because I wasn't watching. I was just listening to the TV. And Mrs. Obama said me.
That's right.
And I just was so disappointed in her answer. But it did speak volumes as to her actions since getting out of the White House. I remember her saying that she never felt she could be herself in the White House. Now, I don't know who could be, because you've signed up for this job. I know you weren't elected, but your spouse did and got elected, and you're a team, and this is the role of a first person in the White House. And so it's disappointing to me to see someone not carrying that through. But boy, that spoke volumes, didn't it?
Oh, it did. It did. And I think it speaks volumes about, and I don't want to, you know, armchair, you know, diagnose their relationship, but I would just say that that is not a good sign. If a couple came into my office and I asked that question and those were the answers that I got, I would have deep, deep concerns about the strength of that relationship.
Well, and here is a couple that they are it's a power couple. It's two people who are equally intelligent, who are well-schooled, who have raised, it looks like, two great girls. They've got it all. And for her to feel that she's missing something, I mean, I can't, like you said, she's living her life and has to be authentic to herself. But it's so disappointing. That's just not what I think of when I think of a family unit and marriage.
Well, because, and I think part of this is that there was, I want to say it was the 1990s, I think I want to say, or so, is when I began noticing this shift away from the parents being, the couple being the most important feature, and then it started to shift to become the children were the most important feature. Oh. And that was the beginning of the end for marriages all over the country.
Really?
Yes. And because I think what happens is that children, and this is not their fault, this is their own narcissism, and it's not their fault, but they will seek to divide parents where they can to get their desires met. Mm-hmm. You know, your parents shop for this, or this one's going to say yes, or whatever. And I think what I saw happening, and this may just be anecdotal, but it was telling to me then, and I saw that becoming a shift away from the couple is the most important thing to there's nothing as important as the children. And I thought that was a bad deal. It was a bad deal then. It's a bad deal now. And I think what it winds up doing is, just to your point, you wind up with people saying, well, I need my own space, instead of this is the most important relationship in my life. We have to do everything to make sure that it survives. Nothing else is important.
Well, and I think that works well when you are a team together and you have a roadmap together of how you're going to raise your children. You don't let that happen in the first place. You know what I'm saying? As far as children playing parents off of each other. I agree with you on that sentiment. I've never been married. It's hard. I don't have children. It's hard for me to weigh in on something that I don't fully understand. But I just know how I would be if I were married and how I would treat that.
No, I don't think you have to go through it to be able to weigh in on it. I mean, that's like saying you have to have cancer to be able to say one thing or another about cancer. Yeah. And I don't think that's true at all. I think you have common sense and you can make observations just like anybody else can. And so I think that the shift here has been the damaging part of it. And again, this is where that kind of you fold in a little bit of this desire for the self, and you wind up with relationships that split.
Yeah. All right. Drive it all home for us now for our topic of psych. What are we calling this?
Pathologizing bad behavior.
Pathologizing bad behavior. Where do you want us to go with this?
I would say stop looking at the diagnostic and statistical manual in order to find reasons for somebody's bad behavior. When you can identify bad behavior, you call it out for what it is, you recognize it, you label it, and you move on. You promise to do better.
Well, you label it what it is. You don't label it a psychological
thing. It's not a psychological disorder until you come to me and I give you a disorder diagnosis. But until then, it's just lousy behavior. Fix it. Promise to do better and keep it moving.
Because you're going to learn more from it.
That's the idea. You both become stronger. Someone who learns about their own bad behavior is less likely to repeat it, instead of slapping a label on it and calling the whole thing done.
And legitimizing the behavior that way, you know.
You legitimize the behavior and you legitimize your injury.
Yeah.
And you lose your ability to really look at your own portion of it, or your own culpability.
Absolutely. Frank Rubino, psychotherapist, on the air each week on the Lucy Ann Lantz Show, Ann Arbor's Talk Station, 1290 WLBY.